My name's Sharon Nichols, and I'm with Texas School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm in the outreach program, and typically I work with technology and sometimes with educational consulting. Today's presentation is going to be on Braille music. It's going to be rather introductory. It's an overview. And so I wanted to show you on this first page what we were going to be going over during this presentation. Braille music presentation. Why Braille music? Why not just have them listen and learn? What is unique to Braille music that makes it different from printed music? What is lost with audio recording when that's all you're using? We'll look at some of the basic Braille music samples and some Braille music production, the teacher producing it, and some Braille music production with the student producing the Braille music. So those will be the topics I hope to address. Why Braille music? Well, like any other Braille source that we teach, it's all about literacy. And when we talk about literacy, we don't just talk about audio literacy. We talk about Braille music. And the reason that they need Braille music is not to just be able to play their instrument or their score with their orchestra, but they're also, even at high school level now, having to do music theory classes. And if they can't use some software or a Perkins Braille writer and be able to produce their own music, then that part of the class doesn't work for them. So it's not just them being able to listen and learn, it's also them being able to produce the music themselves. I was gonna, at this point, show you a short segment of a video. It's produced by NFB.org, the National Federation of the Blind. And as I said, it's just a portion of it because the entire video is 10 minutes long, and I'm not sure we all have that attention span at this time of the day.
I'm a jazz pianist. I first started playing when I was about eight and a half. I learned how to read Braille music at about 12 and a half. My teacher at the time, he pretty much had to tie me down and make me do it. But once I did it, and once I started to understand that it was not a limiting activity, that it was something that was going to broaden even my ability to hear music clearer and understand theory and harmony, then I got much more into it.
In print or Braille, written notation is vital to a musician's development.
It's a window into the composer's thought process as the music was being written.
Music notation is an essential tool in the musician's toolbox. What happens when it's not there?
I'm Barbara Matthews, and I'm Kira Sweeney's mom. One of the frustrations that I had was when the kids in her school were beginning to learn print music, and she didn't have the opportunity to begin to learn Braille music at the same time.
Not having much instruction in Braille music has kept me away from lots of good learning.
And when the blind person wanted to go and be in the school band, a lot of times the sighted music educator did not know there was such a thing as Braille music, or even if he did, he was so anxious about it that he just said, here, you just sit in the corner and listen. Louis Braille invented Braille music. Louis Braille was an organist, a cellist, a pianist. He taught many subjects at the School for the Blind in Paris, but he had a passion for music. And he realized that what we need is a system where we can have right under the tip of a finger, we could feel the pitch of the note and the rhythm of the note. And that's exactly what he's done. He has an elegant system that is very compact, and it still works today, almost 200 years later.
There's no musical staff with lines and spaces in Braille music. However, Braille music is a very logical and sensible system. There is a symbol for each of the seven basic notes of music, and each of those symbols also includes the time value of the note, that is, how long the note is to be held. There are particular symbols in Braille music for modifying those notes as well, making them sharp or flat, for telling you which octave of the scale the note is to be played in, There are symbols for dynamic markings, for fingering, for anything basically that you would see in a print music notation.
Everything that's in the printed score is also in the Braille score. This is movement 3. It's marked presto agitato. It's in 4 sharps, C sharp minor, and 4/4 time. Second measure. There's never going to be a replacement for reading something for yourself and interpreting it in your own way to build whatever life you want.
That was just a short snippet of what I wanted to show you about the Braille music with actual musicians themselves that are reading Braille. And if you heard Marcus, he was talking about how he learned it when he was younger, but basically his teacher of the visually impaired had to tie him down so that he would learn Braille music. It's very common, and I'm sure you've run across it in the school system, that everybody says, well, you know, they can just listen and they learn it. And it's not just the teachers that are saying that. It's the students themselves. Because it's a new code, they're already learning literary, they're already learning nemis and chemical compounds, and now it's a different code. But for a lot of our students, they hope that in the future, they're going to have a music career. And if they're going to have a music career and they go to university, they need to be able to do music theory. And music theory involves composing your own music. So to compose your own music, you need to either be able to use some form of Braille writing utensil and being able to have somebody transcribe that for you, or there's software that allows you to do it with the JAWS screen reading program. With Braille music, you can continually go back and practice particular measures and entire scores. Because when you're a Braille musician, you're reading the Braille, but generally you don't have your hands on the instrument at the same time. So you're having to interpret, and you're having to reread, and you're having to practice it over and over, especially if you're on the piano that has two different lines, one for the right hand and one for the left hand. A lot of music is not just those notes. A lot of it is the dynamic and all the things that go along with it that change how the music sounds. And so that is a way that the musician who reads Braille needs more time to be able to go back to that. And to refer to specific musical attributes in the Braille music. Okay, it's important to remember that when we look at a piece of music, we have the 5 staff markings, we have notes. The notes visually look different. They might have a tail on them. They might have a rest, or they might have a dot, or they might have a dot under them or above them. And all of those things are visual, and the student can immediately look and see that. Not that they know it all at first, because they still have to learn it. But they can see it immediately. And so it's something different. You have to be able to refer to all of those things. Rest, dynamic, staccato, all of those. And then to interpret the musical notation, not the sound of someone else interpreting the notation. A lot of times our students, they're either just listening in the class, or they might have tutorials, and somebody is live and is playing the instrument with them. If it's another student, they might be like one level right above our kids or at the same level, and so they're kind of struggling through the piece too, which doesn't allow you to have those nuances of what the music really sounds like. And you can record the music and give it to the student, but once again, listening to a recording is a lot flatter sound than being able to hear it live. And listening to a recording, typically, fast forward, pause, and stop, and rewind is all the control you have over it. And I dare anybody to try that for a little while and be very satisfied with listening to it, because it's very frustrating to be able to try to do that. on this slide, we're going to talk about what audio lacks that the Braille music notation has. And that would be, it lacks the exact rhythms, articulation, etc., as the composer wrote it. And that's pretty much what I was talking about earlier, is that you can have the music, you can be playing, you can be listening to it, but you want to have the direct input of what the composer meant to happen on that page. There's a reason why it's written down for us. We aren't just learning it by ear. We're learning it from the written page. You want to learn notes and values, and rests, and dynamics, and fingering. When you're learning notes and dynamics, you're going to see in a minute that, like most of the Braille code, exceptions have to be made because you only have the six dots on how you're going to represent the different pieces of music and how you're going to represent the different notes. It's important to remember there aren't very many notes. They just change value and rhythm. And as far as the rest, those are unique and are tied to whether it's an eighth, a quarter, a half, or a whole. So those are pretty much just memorization like the notes themselves. Dynamics and fingerings. Fingerings are found in any string instrument. And words are rehearsal marks. Rehearsal marks might be what the band director is simply trying to draw their attention to his students. It doesn't have to be a formal part of the piece. It could be the choir director or the music teacher or the band director saying, we're going to look at this portion of the piece, and we're going to keep going back to it, and we'll be able to get to it quickly. So when there's a rehearsal mark in a piece of music, if the Braille reader cannot scan quickly and find that rehearsal mark, then they're lost. And so that's part of learning, is not just learning the code itself, but all the many fun markings that go along with it. So for the piano, there are also pedal markings, and then lyrics and their positioning in the music. Pedal markings obviously would be in any instrument that has pedals. Probably the most common for our kids is piano. We don't have too many organ players anymore, but there are kids playing in their church choirs. Lyrics are a whole different beast, because if you think about it and you think of Braille as linear, then you have the line of music, but how do you have the lyrics represented? So what you're going to find is that you actually have a straight line of music, and then you have a straight line of lyrics, and they're going to break at the same place at the end, but they're going to always be the lyrics and the music. And one other thing to remember about any lyrics or any words, even if they're rehearsal markings, but any words that you put into a music Braille score needs to be in uncontracted Braille so that the student will not get confused on what is music and what is words. Okay, let's talk a little bit about how Braille music is represented on the page. It's represented in a linear format. And I one time was working with Bill McCann, and he was saying that he was very confused when they would talk about staff, and they would talk about the notes being, you know, six lines above or four lines below. And he just couldn't figure that out conceptually, how that worked, because he had a single line of Braille music under his fingers. So his music teacher one time used her hand, and she said, this is the staff, the five fingers, and you've got your notes, you've got your F, A, C, E in between the staff, and then each staff has its note, E, G, D, and so forth. Now that's a treble clef staff. But it helped Bill, he said, understand what they were talking about as far as directions on the staff. And when you talk about Braille music, we're getting ready to show you some examples, but you're talking about a linear format. So anything that has to do with changing a note's value or how it's going to be played or its pitch or its tempo has to happen before you get to the note, because you need to know that before. And that's another reason why students will have to have the opportunity to read and reread before they even attempt to play from the score. There's also the key signatures, the tempo, the octaves, the sharps and flats, and the other markings like your forte, pianissimo, staccato. I say all these words like I really know how to use them, but I have learned a lot, but I'm not much of a musician myself. When we talk about key signatures, that's your 4-4, and you'll see how that is represented in a minute. And when we talk about the tempo, if there is a tempo in the piece of music, that will be written out, again, in uncontracted letters. Not every piece of music or score has a tempo attached to it. Octaves. Once again, remember the octaves are visually the height and the length of they are from the staff markings. Well, if that's the case, there has to be a way in Braille for a simple mark to appear before a note, allowing the student to know that it's in this octave. And so octave markings we're going to go over in a little while, and they're very easy to understand once you start to use them. And once again, having not read music before I started all of this, I'm amazed that I can even pick it up, but I can. Now we get to the part where everybody goes, oh yeah, why is a letter D a middle C? And I say, it has nothing to do with literary. You have to let that go. At the time, Louis Braille and composers, they didn't use notes per se. That was pretty modern. And when you think about that, you're thinking about Mozart, Chopin, and all of those. Music started out auditorily, and it started out mostly in the churches where they were doing chanting and very simple songs generally represented of text. And so what you had was just orally learned down through the ages, but then they understood that if they didn't represent it from the book, they wanted it to be tied to one specific sound. So therefore they came up with this thing called solfège, and I hope that's close enough pronunciation. The first system of functional names for the musical notes was the beginning symbols of the first 6 musical lines of the Latin hymn, there is its name. I can't say Latin, so that will be it. So the original sequence was UT, however you pronounce that, re, mi, fa, so, la. So a lot of that you recognize. But it changed after we quit using Latin and went to more of the English language, and now you know it as do, re, mi, fa, so, la, ti, do. And basically anybody who's seen The Sound of Music has heard that over and over and over again. So once again, music was tied to solfège. Solfège started being used to separate the notes and to make them always representative of a lyric or a book. And then it started in Latin and slowly went away from the Latin. It actually started in Greek, but we're not going to go there. But so it changed to the do, re, mi. And so at the time that Louis Braille was creating the music Braille code, it was actually in flux and in transition from the Latin to the do, re, mi that we are familiar with. So very important just to let the fact go that it is not tied to a literary letter. And come on, there aren't that very many notes. It just takes some practice, and pretty soon you don't even have to start thinking about, oh, a D is a C, oh, and you don't have to do that. Pretty soon you'll just start memorizing the notes and being able to go from there. But it's very important that when you're working with your students, do not go, oh, this doesn't make any sense. How can a middle C be the letter D? Please don't let them hear that from you. It's almost as bad as when sometimes students overhear how difficult Braille is to learn to read. Things that we say influence the students. and influence how they react and interact with the Braille. So please, it is simply a separate code that represents a different language per se. Okay, I want you to appreciate this. This is a score, and it is simply the soprano part of a score, so it is very small. And this is what generally happens when I see students given music. They're given a whole page of music. They haven't learned to read notes yet. They don't know any of the markings as far as sharps and flats. They don't know where the key signature is located, because it's located the same place every time. They don't understand when it has words and letters and when it has just the music. They don't know the measures. They don't understand any of the musical content. As far as they're concerned, when you hand them a sheet of music that looks like this, you're just handing them a bunch of bumps on a piece of paper. It isn't till we start teaching and begin teaching, pretty much like they do in elementary school. How many times do they go over, this is a treble clef, this is a bass clef, this is a treble clef, over and over and over. And if our students are reading that in Braille at the same time, they're not going to have any problem when it's in the Braille music piece. The same thing with the notes themselves. The students go over and over and over them, and they talk about measures. They learn these things piecemeal. You don't start out with a song and say, okay, what are all those physical representations in it? They break it down to notes, and they work on what is an eighth note, what's a quarter note, what's a half note, and what's a whole note. All of those things need to be explained to students, and if you look at any worksheets that they're doing in elementary school when they're being introduced to it, it's very repetitive, and that is when our students should start to learn the Braille music code. Even if they're not going to go into music, they could learn the beginnings of the Braille music code. Once again, look at this sheet of music and take in the fact that that would not mean much to anyone. Let's talk about note names. You've got seven notes, right? Note names are shown in the upper four dots of the cells. Do not let yourself think of literary equivalents of these note names. Louis Braille did not call notes by letter names. He called them ut, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si. And it wasn't important to him that the same signs in another context stood for letters of the alphabet. So if you look at the note name on the left-hand side, you will notice that the notes on the right-hand side in Braille are all in the upper four cells of the Braille. And we're going to go over that time and time again. Okay, let's look at a single line of melody. And what I want you to notice from this is, remember earlier when I said when students are beginning to learn, basically you probably only want to represent the notes, and basically you only want to represent the note name. You're not adding whether it's a quarter, a half, a whole. You're letting them know repetitively what is the name of that note. So if you look at this simple piece, this simple melody, you'll see that it's a treble clef, and it's giving you a lot of information, that it's two sharps, four times. The only Braille you're seeing on there right now are the notes. You're not seeing the values. You're not seeing whether they're dotted notes. You're just seeing the notes. And if you look from left to right, because I don't expect you to have your hand out and be able to go back and forth quickly, but you've got a D, D, A, F, E, B, G, A, G, F, E, D, D. Okay? And we're going to refer to that. We're going to add more things into this simple line of melody as we learn the representations of quarter, eighth, and all of that. Okay, so we're going to come back to some very simple melodies again, and each time we're going to be adding something. I had to make some corrections because it almost seemed like they didn't make sense, because as I was adding things onto the piece of music, it almost threw off to me important things that you may have figured out before you get to them. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Note time value. I want you to notice that, let's start at the bottom of this chart in a minute, because what you have here is, remember you have those upper cells of the do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, and what you have there are eighth notes. A lot of music classes, they'll start with quarter notes because it's such an easy beat, but in Braille music, it's easier, it makes more sense if you start with eighth notes. So that's something you might need to work with your students on, and you might want to mention it to the music teacher, is that that is the basic note that the student's going to learn in their linear Braille piece. Let's look back at this chart, and you'll notice that the quarter is the same as the eighth, except it adds dot six. The half adds dot three. The whole note adds dot three and six. As the notes section of the Braille music chart above indicates, a single symbol shows both the pitch and the rhythmic length of a note. For instance, dot 1, 4, 5 indicate an eighth note of C. Now, obviously, anybody out there who has studied music or who has written music or even reads music knows that there's many other note values other than eighth to whole. So basically what we have is a repetition. And it kind of makes sense. You only have those few cells to add things, the three and the six, to change their values. But sometimes you'll have those same things, but they might be 16th or they might be 32nd. And that might seem a little confusing, but really it's not. Because if you count, you know, 6, 7 notes under your fingers, you're going to know that those aren't whole notes. They're probably 32nds. So don't get hung up on the fact that as your students are kind of learning this and maybe memorizing it, it's going to change in the future a little bit. That will be when they understand exactly how much value should be within a measure per time, like 4-4 time. This was the hardest thing for me to learn because it sure seems like math. And it is math, because what you're doing is you're saying with that 4-4 time, you're saying how many beats are going to be in that measure. And 4-4 is kind of easy because it's easier to count up the notes that way. But you have to be able to match the measure with the time, and that will let you know if it's something like 32nds or it's eighth notes. Here's a simple scale with note values. And what you see here is you see that this has 7-4 time, and we don't care about that. We're not representing that. We are only looking at the notes. And if you notice, they're all quarter notes. They begin with the middle C, and we'll talk about what that dot in front of them is in just a little bit. Hopefully you notice that, because it's the only place it shows up on this simple line of melody. So you've got your C, D, E, F, G, A, B. So there's your basic scale, and there is an extra marking in there, so I kind of want you to think about why that marking might be there and what it might tell the person who's reading the Braille line. So once again, these are quarter notes. You can tell that the C has the extra dot six. They have all added the dot six to change the value of what the note is. Key and time signatures. These aren't really very hard. Basically, it's a little bit harder to write it down than it is to explain it. So I'll read what I wrote and then we can talk about it. Following the Braille number sign, the upper number of the time signature is shown by the appropriate number in the upper half of the cell. The lower number of the signature is shown by a lower cell numeral without another number sign immediately following. If the lower number is 4, it may look to you at first as if it were a period. Likewise, if it is an 8, you might mistake it for a question mark. That's why if you look at this example, you'll see that it reads 2 sharps, and this is the first time I'm introducing the actual sharp symbol, which is one of the few that makes sense because it's the SH. So you have 2 sharps there, then you have your number sign, and you have your upper cell 4 and your lower cell 4 without any more number signs. That tells you it's 4-4 times and with 2 sharps. I don't think this is really a very difficult part of the code to understand. And when you see where it's located in a little bit on the musical piece, you'll see that it really doesn't throw anybody off at all. So here's an example of a different key and time signature, this one being a little bit more unique. For example, a key signature with 7 sharps would begin with the Braille number sign, followed by the upper cell 7, followed by the sharp sign. The time signature would then be another number sign followed by the 12 with a dropped 8. It would read as 7 sharps in the key signature of 12 over 8 as the time signature. You'll see this a lot with Braille music because you don't want to put 7 sharps down below their fingers because you don't really want them having reading and counting how many sharps. So if you give them a number sign and you say 7 or 8 or whatever, then you will be able to say, okay, there's 7 sharps there very quickly, and it's in 12/8 because that's the number I expect at the end. It has to be the 2 numbers for the time signature. But sometimes the key signature will be 7 flat. It gets crazy sometimes. So anytime it's over 3, you're generally going to see a number sign and how many of the sharps are flat represent that key signature. Everybody okay out there? You can ask questions. It's always strange doing these. Measures. Okay, Braille music is linear, and so it's under my fingers. So how do I know when I go to the next measure? How do I know when I've finished and if there's some signs in there I'm not familiar with, I need to ask for help? I know that the measure is a space. So if you look at the example here, measures are separated by blank cells representing the single bar lines. So when you see a piece of music with 4 quarter notes and then it has the little line, the bar sign, that would be a space in the Braille music piece. Once again, if you look at this sample, you'll see something that isn't going to happen later because it's not correct. But what you have there is you have the 2 sharps, and then your time signature is the 4-4, and then you have a note and a measure. You have 3 notes and a measure. You have 2 notes and a measure, and many notes. Now, here's the problem. I didn't know if somebody that was watching this would actually know Braille music and would be cringing right now trying to figure out what's going on. Because when I first did it, I was looking at it going, that makes absolutely no sense to me. Because if it's 4-4 time, it starts with a quarter note, and it's not its own measure. There's no way that a quarter note can be its own measure. So basically, this was just representing what measures would be. So I went back and I put the line of print music in, and you'll notice that it has a quarter sign all by itself. And those of you who play music or read music might know this as a pickup note or a, what's that fancy word, anacrusis. And so you'll see also that there are some dotted notes, and dotted notes change the value. So I thought I would add in correct form, because it's always on the top. It's going to tell you the key and time signature on the top before you read any music. So there's your 2 sharps in 4-4 time, and there's your first measures, and these are broken down correctly. And you'll notice some of the dotted notes. And we'll talk about those in a minute, so it's okay. Dotted notes. A print dot that increases a note's value by one half is shown by Braille dot 3 in the next cell after the note. Dotted notes are pretty prevalent when I've been transcribing scores, so it's important that you understand where the dot is going to exist to actually make that note a dotted note. And once again, if the student has learned some of their time signatures and their reading and the measure, they're going to go, okay, that can't be three-quarter notes for 4/4. Something has to be different. And that's where they would find the dotted notes. So let's look at the slide once again. And we see that a dotted half note, remember a half note has the dot 3 to show that it's a half note. The dotted half note, it's always going to be dotted in cell 2. So that will let you know that that's a dotted half, and yes, it matters that it's in cell 2. You'll see in a little while why that matters. So you've got your half note, which once again is represented with the dot 3 added. You've got your quarter note, which is represented with the dot 6 added. And you've got your eighth, which is represented with nothing but the letter sign. Okay, let's talk for a few minutes. I'm not sure, but I think that some of your handouts, when they were going through the transition from PowerPoint to Word, you might have ended up with ASCII, a lot of number signs and slashes and things like that. If you will open that Word file on your computer, highlight those symbols that don't mean anything to you, and choose, instead of Helvetica or Arial, choose a Braille font, and then you'll go, aha, all of a sudden the dots will be correct. Because for those of you listening to me right now, I have a feeling most of what you're seeing is the number sign, the slashes, the letters, and it probably doesn't make much sense. So if you got it in a Word file, go ahead and open that on your computer. Change the font of the ASCII characters only to a Braille font, and then you'll get the dots that you're expecting. You're very patient with me for putting up with that. Okay, so when we look at a single line with dotted notes, you'll notice that the piece is starting to build itself more. It's starting to look longer, like you would expect any music to look. So, once again on top, and it's always going to be above the music, is your two sharps in 4/4 time. Then you have that quarter note by itself, and we still don't know why it's over there by itself. But you'll notice the second note in has your dotted note. Actually, I made a mistake earlier. The dot is right where you expect it to be on the third cell. Yikes. Okay, well, we'll go over that again. We have a handout that shows all of it. So, for the dotted notes on that single line with dotted notes, those of you who have a Braille font, and this shows up in the PowerPoint if you have the PowerPoint, but those of you who have the Braille represented by dots will see that you have your quarter note, then you have a half note, then you have a quarter note with a dot 3, and then you go back to an eighth note because it's in the upper cell. Those of you who don't have the correct copy are probably going to have to refer back to some of this audio and figure out what it is. I would really appreciate if you can't change the Word into the Braille font, and if you could possibly get the PowerPoint, because the PowerPoint, it represents it more as a picture than it does as a font. But if you cannot get it in a form that shows you the dots for an actual representation of the Braille, then email me or call me and let's make sure you get that file so that you have something to refer to. Okay. The next slide shows the heavy double bar that signals the end of the music in print. It's represented by the two cell signs, 126 and 13. Remember, this is the ending bar. It's important to understand that you'll still have the 126, but it'll be different configurations for different bars, like repeat bars, and whether it repeats to the left or to the right. All of those have a unique sign, but they all are similar so that you can figure out that they're a bar sign. The next slide shows you the piece again, the same line of music, and it says the beginning of a musical score is the number of the first measure at the margin, followed by a blank cell. If, as in this case, the first measure is not a full measure, the measure is given the number zero. If you look at the piece, it might start making sense why that quarter note's all by itself. And the reason you would know in Braille that it was a pickup note is because instead of the measure being labeled number one, it would be labeled zero. And that lets the student or whoever's reading the score know that that's a pickup note. And you'll notice in this example, hopefully you have it with the dots, that you'll notice the dotted notes and you'll notice the measures with the space in between them. Remember earlier when I was talking about the octaves and how for a blind student they don't get that spatial quality, and obviously it's not just a guess or a listen to when the octave goes up of the note. They actually have a representation so that they can know exactly which octave that note is. It also gets very technical with intervals and things, but right now, for the purpose of this overview, I'm only going to talk about octaves. So if you look at the slide, it says Braille music does not include staves or staff marks, five lines and four spaces, or clef signs, as shown below. Print music notation is graphical in vertical and horizontal space. An octave sign designates the note's specific place in the full range of pitches. The Braille octave marks are all right cell signs, so that they're up against the note, and this kind of makes sense. If you think about it, the nice thing is you still want them learning when they're younger the treble clef, the bass clef, the tenor, because those are things that are going to be referred to constantly, and it doesn't hurt them to learn it. But you do need to understand that when they're actually going to be reading a Braille music piece or score, there is not going to be a treble or a bass clef sign. And the reason for that is because they have a single line. It doesn't matter to them whether it's treble or bass. It matters what that dot is for which octave it's going to be in. Let's look at the handout again. You'll notice that at the beginning of the print music, it's way far down there at the bottom. And so automatically the students know that's the bass clef. Well, the Braille student would know it because it's an upper cell, the dot four. Remember, they're always against the letter. They're always in that right-hand side of the cell. And then you go up to the second, and then the third. And if you look at the fourth, it's probably the most common one you're used to. It's a dot five because that's middle C. And so a lot of their early music will be represented that way. So in a minute, when we're looking at some more print music with the Braille music, we're going to point out the octave marks and which octave it changes it to. And here's how I learned Braille music. I would get a piece of music from the National Library Service, the easiest one I could find, or I would only use one page of it. And I would sit there, and with the music notation book that's available from NLS, or that you can download from BANA, I believe, I would painstakingly flip back and forth through the pages and learn these signs. And even though it's tedious, it helps if you can read the notes themselves, because you'll know, okay, there's a staccato with this, so in Braille music there has to be a way to show that. So you won't have to be looking quite as much as I did, but it helps if you will take a Braille sheet of music and you will, with your pencil, try to write down what the representation would be in the print music. It's the same thing we did when we were learning Braille, literary Braille notation, and sometimes it's the same as Nemeth, although Nemeth is unique with the equations and things. But I know that most teachers of the visually impaired, I'll speak for myself, I know that most teachers of the visually impaired aren't 100% familiar with the Nemeth code. However, you make sure that whatever your student is getting ready to be introduced in the next month or the next couple of weeks, that you have that from the book and you are ready to teach them that Nemeth code skill. So it's the same with the Braille music. You have to do some homework on what these signs are as you slowly start rolling them into the score. Because at first you're going to work with just the notes. Then you're going to work with the note values as far as speeding up or slowing down. And it helps to kind of tap on the table for the students. Because as you're tapping, they're desperately trying to stay up with their notes and call them out to you. But they'll get better at it. Then you add in some dotted notes. Then you add in the key signature. So at the same time that you're going to be teaching this to your students, you are going to be learning it so that you're more familiar with what it looks like in the score. So once again, let's look at this slide. Those will be represented in Braille by either .456 or any combination of those cells. And that will let the student know, okay, this is a middle C. Okay, this is a second octave C. They have to be able to know that. And you'll notice that it did kind of copy those who have dots, but like on the fourth octave, you'll notice that it's the .5, and then for the note, it's actually the C, and it's a half note. Okay, let's look at the rest. The rest are important in Braille music and in print music to let the student know when to pause. The Braille signs for rest are as follows. The whole note, which is just a round note, and is represented by the small black square below the line that Brian, who helps me with music, says it's a hole in the line, so you know it's a whole rest. It's represented basically by, I won't say it, but by 1, 3, and 4, and you know what that is, but 1, 3, and 4 is the whole rest. The half note, Brian told me that with a half note, which looks graphically the same as a whole note, it would be represented, he said, like a hat on top of the line. So the whole note is like a hole below the line, and a half rest is a hat on top of that line. And then you have also on the slide the representation of the quarter note and the rest, which is very pretty. I don't know what to call that symbol. And you'll notice that if you look at the whole note dots, it's the 1-3-4. If you look at the half note dots, it's 1-3-6. So they're just kind of flipped exactly like they would be in print and in graphic music. So think of it that way. The one is flipped and one represents the whole and one represents the half. Even though to me they're backwards. Because it seems to me if the one below should be the whole note. Anyway, looking back at the slide, you'll see that the quarter note is 1-2-3-6. So that's the representation of the quarter note. The eighth rest is just 1-3-4-6, like an X. And that's the eighth note rest. The 16th rest, because you'll see it a lot too, looks like the 8th note, but with an extra little marking on it. They look very identical. And if you'll notice, remember we talked about this, about how a lot of this is repeated but has a different value. If you look at the 16th rest, it's visually different, but the Braille is the same as a whole note rest. It's 1, 3, 4. And the reason I told you you'll be able to tell whether that's a 16th note or a whole note is obviously the whole note rest is going to be by itself in a measure, whereas the 16th should be represented with quite a few notes. Everybody okay out there? Okay. Rest in music. I have made some of these dots blue and some of them red. And basically, if you look at the blue, it's the first time you've seen it, but it's a tempo marking. If you notice in the print music, it says gently. So that shows up first. In uncontracted Braille, it says gently and it has the period. And then it says the key signature and time signature. So you've got gently and then the number sign 4 flat, and you've got the number sign 6/8 for the time signature. And the ones that are red, the dots that are red in this, are your rests. So if you look to the end of the first line, you will see the quarter note rest and the eighth rest. If you look at the beginning of the next line, you will see the whole note rest. Now, that matches the linear form of the print music that's showing, but that, once again, is really only for instructional purposes. Braille music is one of the few formats that you can be a little bit more generous with how you Braille it, because what you're wanting to do is make sense to the person who's reading it. So you kind of want to make sense with where you start the next measure. And it might not match the print. More than likely, 9 times out of 10, it will not. Okay, on the next, we won't go into these next ones so much, but on the next slide, I did mention the staccato and the accent. And the staccato is 2/3/6, and the accent is 4/6, and then 2/3/6. Because they're very similar in what they do to the note value. Once again, you have that same piece of music that we've just added onto in print. And down below now, you'll notice that I have note measure markings. So I have the measure 1, and I have the measure 7. So it lets you know where in that piece you are. And you'll see that the ones in red are either your staccato markings that match the notes with the dot right below them, or they're the 4/6, 2/3/6, which matches the accent mark, which is like a sideways V, and it can be above the note or below the note.
Karen,
yes.
I comment that they can't see the top and the bottom being cut off on the margin. I'm wondering if you could go out
as a slideshow for just the
slides, if you look at all of that
for them,
and then can you put them in on?
I can try.
Or maybe that.
A little too much. Just a second. I'm not very good with the mouse, you guys. Does that kind of show you the, you'll notice that there are actually 4 lines of Braille music, and there are only 2 lines of the print music, and that's why I put in the numbers for the measures. Because at the top one, you only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 measures. But it doesn't fit, or it doesn't make sense to put all 5 on one line. And that's where you're going to learn the more symbols you are learning, such as, you know, sharp, flat, natural, staccato, accents, the longer the Braille is going to become. So we started out very simply, and now we're going to longer representations. If we look at this one, there's there's really only two things from this slide I want you to notice. What I want you to notice on the piano is that you have a new symbol at the beginning of the piece of music. You have the 4-6, 4-3-4-5, and that is the right hand of the piano. Then you have the 4-5-6-3-4-5, and that is the left hand of the piano. Remember earlier when you were watching the video, he was reading it, and then he was reading it with his left hand. I kind of want to show you a short video now that demonstrates how you have to read that as a Braille user. This is a video from the Royal Academy in England.
It's important that music is made available to everyone, and this approach actually automates that process.
Claire Galand is a blind teacher of young musicians at the Royal College.
How about we try to put some of the chords together?
Okay.
You've got the vocal line, so you've got the notes of that are sung, and you've also got, on a third line, you've got the chord symbols which a guitar would play. And Maya is a guitarist, so she's able to use everything in these Glee songs, apart perhaps from the piano.
Tomoko Endo is a partially sighted pianist of great talent, a postgraduate student at the Royal College of Music.
I am partially sighted as well, so I was using large print for the most part, whereas with music I was learning everything using auditory means. When I started Braille music, I was 13. And by then, I'd already been playing the piano for 9 years. There was a huge gap between what I could read and what I could play. It's not possible for us to read and play simultaneously. So when I'm reading, I tend to do this, where with the right hand, here comes another problem, because in the left hand we have, but with it there's a separate little sign that says there's something else going on here, and that they tell you with signs to tell us to take with the right hand. So I have to read the right hand and the left hand, and then come to figure out that it's not just, which would be a lot easier for me, but instead it's,
goodness,
and then put it together with the left hand and get to, I need to be able to read music as well so that I can interpret the pieces on my own without the risk of copying somebody else's interpretation. You want to learn a piece of music, but...
Okay, we're going to stop there. I just wanted to give you an example of having to read the piano music, how you can read it with one hand, and you can play the right or the left hand, but until you read the full line of the left and the right together, she didn't notice that there was a sign in there that changed how she played the right hand. So you don't just pick it up, read it, and play, okay? You have to interpret it. So I'm going to go on to the next slide, and I'm going to try to put it in full screen, and just for a minute, just to see if people can see it. These are a few dynamics. I didn't want to put them all down here, but those of you familiar with music will see quite a few crescendos and decrescendos. And sometimes instead of seeing the hairpins, the long lines, you'll see the CRES and the DECRES. They're the same thing, it's just however the person wrote it, wants it represented. So you'll notice that they're different as far as the Braille. So as a Braille user, I think you would prefer the hairpins because they're shorter symbols. The reason there are two sets of Braille notation showing there is you need to know what notes the crescendo starts on and what notes it ends on. That way you quit playing with more emotion at that last note where it's marked. And then down at the bottom, you'll see there's some of your pianissimo, your mezzo forte, and those are simply, I'll tell you right now, that that sign is representing that it's a word or a letter. So that's what's actually going on is the sign. You'll notice it's just the letter after that, the MF, the MP, and the same if you see FF. I will show this in case you couldn't see it, but basically that's what's on the screen, and it's just a few of them. Okay, I'm going to go to the next slide, and I think we'll be okay, but I might have used too much space. And I want to draw your attention to something. Those of you, hopefully, who have the dots in front of you, you will notice that there's your beginning of the crescendo. And what the end of the crescendo is the same thing except it's dot 2 and 5 instead of 1 and 4. It should be represented here, and it is missing altogether. So I worked with this from a book, and I have no way of correcting that, so I just kind of want to point out that there should be the ending crescendo marking here, because then you have the FF, the whatever it stands for. Sorry, can't say it too well. And then you have the octave sign. Okay, remember the octave signs? That's the fourth, and you're just going to see those all the time. And here you have, once again, the symbol letting you know that it's a letter or a word, and you have the FF. Then you have something unique. Remember that the dropped, the 2, 3, 6 was for your staccato and accent. You'll notice here that there's a dot, and then you have two symbols for the staccato, and that means that the rest of the notes all have staccato. And so they give a symbol instead of having to put that in front of every note. This one should be okay. It's at the top. Here's some examples of slurs, and once again, they're much like the crescendos. They have to let you know there's a beginning, and they have to let you know that there's an end. Now, how they're different is when you're using slurs, you're actually going to get the beginning of the slur before the note that begins the slur, and you're going to get it before the end of it because it wants to, tie those pieces together. I think that's the whole point of a slur and a tie. And so looking at this piece, you'll see once again there's the octave mark, and then there is the beginning of your tie. No, those are rests. I apologize. Those are rests. Don't pay attention. There's your C, and there's your tie beginning, and then this one goes all the way over to the A. You'll see another where it stops on that A. Does that make sense to you? And then you'll see it here, and then it stops after the B. You might notice there's a new symbol in front of the B. If you notice up on the print, that's a symbol for the natural B. I want to show you some other things. So I'm just going to mention, I challenge you to go through this piece and find the repeats and the brackets. I will tell you that a repeat, generally a repeat can be used for a bracket, a measure, a series of notes that are the same, and you can even have multiple repeats. So if you're reading a sheet of music and it has one measure the same, then the next, you're going to have three lowercase g's. You're going to have the measure, then you're going to have how many times it repeats with a lower g. And then there's a symbol for the repeating bar line, whether it's on the left or the right. But I think I'm going to cut that short, and so we'll go on. I wanted to point out and remind you that this is how they should be starting the music. They should only be doing, there you have the key signature, which is fine. You don't have to introduce it at first, but definitely just the notes. And this one has the note value, but at first I would simply do the eighth, the upper cell, so that they can memorize those notes, start getting faster with them, and then you can add whether it's a quarter, half, whole. Okay, teacher creation of Braille music. This is where I've done it all of these ways, and some of it's ugly and some of it's easier. I have done a lot of training with the Goodfield software, which I really like. It lets you take a very complicated piece of music, scan it in, clean it up, and then make it into Braille music. However, the reason it's listed last on this list is you're assuming when you use that software, you're assuming that when you use Dancing Dots Goodfield Suite, that the student has learned and practiced with all of the concepts that came before. You cannot scan a sheet of music, clean it up, hand it to the student, and expect them to do anything with it. I've seen this happen, and you know what they do? I've seen them sit on it in the band room because it means nothing to them if they haven't learned the skills that lead up to the whole score. So Goodfield should be at the bottom, and probably for us, if we are the sighted teacher and we're creating this, I do it with either Duxbury or Braille 2000 with the six key entries. And so that's kind of nice to be able to do it that way. I don't generally use a Perkins Braille writer because I am not a natural Braillist and I make too many errors. Sometimes I will use the Mount Batten Braille writer, which, by the way, if you have the newest one, the bright blue one, it has music Braille built into it. And if you want to learn more about that, give me a call. But it has three different ways to use the music code within the Mount Batten Brailler. One is just simply playing a little tune. The other is letting you know what notes that you're inputting. And it's pretty high level as far as what it does. Now, that's if the teacher is creating the Braille score. Goodfield Suite, you should definitely have it if your student knows how to read Braille music and they are in choir or in band in, say, high school or upper middle school. It has three pieces of software. One is called SharpEye. It's a music OCR software. You scan a piece of music and it recognizes it and changes it into music. Once again, it's important to remember, if any of you have tried to represent mathematics in a word processor and then really think it's going to become MEMIS, it won't, because it's almost like Spanish, French, German. It's a different language. And so even though it looks like text and it looks like graphical, you know, representations, it's a different language. And so you have to, with SharpEye, take it from the pure print into a music. Okay, and then you have the LimeAllow, which is a accessible music notation. And I'll talk about that more, but that's where it puts it in to what you expect to see. And there's a few steps you have to do in there. You have to give it the tempo, the time. You have to make sure that it has the ending bar. So there's five steps you have to do before you dare send it to Goodfield to get the Braille, or it'll just error, error, error. Goodfield, you simply, on the file menu from Lime, go down and it says Launch Goodfield. Once you launch Goodfield, you have several choices, and I'll show you that. But that's how you take the print notation and make it into Braille. Please do not be doing that first. Please be instructing them on how to read the Braille music. So here's a picture of the SharpEye picture scan. The reason I call it a picture is, if you notice, it's only on the bottom, and that is simply the picture that it is taking of the piece of music. This is when it did its OCR, and down at the bottom is still the picture. On the top, it becomes the music. And you'll notice on this that there are several things you can change. These will turn. You can add notes. You can change the values. You can make them triplets, which took me forever to understand. Then you export it to LimeLoud, and this is what it looks like. It looks like what you would expect a sheet of music. If you'll notice, there's that teeny tiny piano down at the bottom. I can't use that because I don't play the keyboard. So what I did was I learned the shortcut keys that allowed me to move the notes in the octaves and allowed me to make them sharps and quarters and wholes. So you don't have to use that little keyboard. Okay, this is LimeLoud's a good feel. Oh, let me say one thing about LimeLoud. The student can open a LimeLoud and it'll give them a choice. What do you want to make this? Piano, guitar? And then it'll ask them how many measures they want. It doesn't matter because you can add measures. And then it'll ask them what time they want it in, 4/4, 12/8. And then you hit OK and it gives you blank staffs. Then the student can go in and from a computer keyboard, the home row computer keyboard is the fourth octave. And you can simply insert notes. And then with the number 1, 2, 3, 4, you can change it from quarter to whole to half, and then with the S to a sharp, and it's all embedded, and it works with JAWS. It doesn't work with any other screen reader, simply JAWS. And what that does is it allows the student, remember music theory, to write their own music and to be able to then print it out for the teacher. They can put it in Braille for themselves. But what they really want to do is be able to turn it into the teacher. So they can print it out and turn it into the teacher. You can also use one of those pretty keyboards that plugs into the computer, a MIDI keyboard. But it's not like you're simply playing into it. There are still steps you have to do to change octaves because the MIDI keyboard is not a full piano. LimeLoud's a good feel, basically. You can still see the LimeLoud in the background, and you see the Braille on the right-hand side. The reason you see the Braille is because I pushed the button that said Braille Editor. This button says Embosser, and it would have gone straight to Braille. But I typically choose Braille Editor because what I like to do is I then copy this entire Braille, and I put it in to either Duxbury or Braille 2000, because then if I want to write some instructions or some transcriber notes, some notes that I want to put in it, I can 6-key entry into it because it's a Braille file. I can also take that Braille file and use it on a Braille Note or a Braille Sense or any of the Braille note takers, and I have the Braille right under my fingers. Likewise, when I'm using Lime, and I'm using the JAWS to write it, if I'm a student using JAWS, I can have a Braille display, either my Braille Note or a different Braille display hooked up, and have the Braille right under my fingers so I'll know, oh no, I didn't mean to do that, and you can make corrections to the score at that point. This is when I copied it from Goodfield Braille Editor to Duxbury. And you see that basically it looks like what you would expect. Now, if you use that yellow bar to read it, it'll look like a lot of your Microsoft Word copies in that it has the ASCII. But this is how I manipulate it once I've got the Braille music. And you'll notice maybe on this score, it's got a title up at the top. I'm not going to read it. And then it has the composer or the person who arranged it. And then it says it's a soprano piece. And then you notice down below that it's in 3/4 time and no sharps and no flats before that, no key signature before that. So that is some of the things you should be looking for. And you should encourage the student to use the LimeLoud. And I know that we're going to be doing some training on that in the future. It's harder because it's with students, so there's the logistics. I'd like to thank you and ask if you have any questions. And the code for this is 120522. Once again, the code is 120522. And if anybody wants to to look. We have a few minutes. If anybody has any questions, you're welcome to ask me. One of the things I have on the handout are a few web pages. So if nobody's asking questions, I'm just going to go through a few of them. This is one called brl.org, and it has the entire music code on it, and it's for sighted people because it has the dots. Now, this is NLS. NLS has a huge collection of Braille music scores, but once again, you've got to remember, they're probably for the adults. We have a question.
At what age range do you use which software program?
I probably, it depends on, the question was, at what age do you introduce the Good Feel or the Lyme Aloud? And that pretty much has to be on the student's ability to write Braille music and to read Braille music. Generally, I've seen it maybe in the eighth or ninth grade, the introduction. But you really need to make sure they're competent at reading it, because it does give you every little symbol and nuance to the piece, which if they haven't been taught how to read it, makes it kind of hard. And here's a website I like to show, because this is a woman who shares her music. She is a teacher. She is a certified Braille transcriber. And she has some music there for you, some samples, and free transcriptions of guitar music. And below that, it's called Happy Fingers. So it's some samples. And then there's this wonderful tutorial called BMC Tutorial. BMC dot B-R-A-N-C-H. No. Let's try that again. BMC dot B-R-A-N-C-H-A-B-L-E dot com. Branchable. BMC dot branchable. It is wonderful because it is very easy. It starts off very simply, and it shows you a lot of those signs and then symbols. It is not the entire code. Then, most importantly, as we close up, this website is a volunteer website, much like Bookshare. It is free. You just have to sign up with your email. But once you sign up, you can download Braille scores. You can also even request Braille scores from a volunteer. Anyway, thank you very much. I hope it was useful for you. And I enjoy it. I encourage you to use the Braille music code with your students and help them if they're going to study music further on. Thanks.